Well, welcome to the Garden Conversation. And today, Kate Fossman and I are going to converse about gardening.
Hi, good morning.
And I asked Kate to come on because I wanted to talk about what it was like being a brand new gardener and figuring out how to do it and what to do and all of that. And so first of all, tell us what you're doing. You've built a new house and you have a new space and you're creating a garden, right?
Right. Yeah. So phase one was building the house. Mm-hmm. Phase two was building the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And so the garden is about a 20 foot by 40 foot area fenced, but we have two beds.
Mm-hmm.
We have a trellis, and then kind of a priority of the garden, it seems at this point, is apple trees.
Uh-huh. So you've decided to do some trees. That's very smart. I waited 15 years to do mine. So it's very smart to start that first because it takes a while for them to get going.
Thank you. Yeah. I heard this quote, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago.
Yes.
And the second best time is now.
Now.
Yeah.
That's right. So you're doing the right thing and getting those started. And so are they in an enclosed area, or are you maybe don't have the enclosure yet? Or
we're about 75% of the way done with the enclosure at this point. I'm a little dragging my feet just a little bit on electrifying that fence, but it's going to happen sooner or later.
Right.
We'll see if it is effective in keeping wildlife out. I hope it deters them. I hope it works on the wildlife, and I hope I can just train my dog to stay away.
Right. Yeah. Well, when the fruits start to come, that's when you have to worry about the bears in particular.
Right.
And and hopefully bears are trainable. All they have to do is stick their nose on that fence.
Right.
But if they don't get their nose on the fence, they've got quite a bit of power to power through. But
I'm really hoping that that we don't even need to get to that point.
Right.
But I do hope that they learn their lesson. If they do, I'll also be using other smart bear tactics, like not leaving stinky garbage around and things like that. Not even letting them know that this is a place of that they need to be involved in.
Right. So you're doing trees, but then you said that you've got two beds. Are they raised beds, or are they in the ground, or how are you doing that?
So this is something that I think a lot of people will listen to and say this is a beginner's mistake, but they're not raised beds. They're in the ground. We dug out two bed areas and then attempted to create good soil within those beds. We're going to see if that works or if that's something really silly, but that's why it's only two beds and we didn't, try to do the whole yard that way.
It'll be interesting what you find. I think there's quite a few. I have both. I have both in the ground and raised. And now that our climate is getting a little bit warmer, I think that it's less of a priority to have a raised bed. I think raised beds tend to get warmer faster, and you can manage your moisture a little bit better. But now that we don't have to deal with, the rains quite as much as we used to, and it is warmer, I think in-ground, there's some advantages to in-ground. It holds the moisture better. You'll see. And if you need to, the thing is, it's not too difficult making a raised bed once you have that ground. You're working on getting that ground, fertile ground and all. Mm-hmm. And so it's not too big of a deal to turn that into a raised bed if you choose to do that in future years.
To build a box.
To build
and
a box.
To fill it up.
Yeah. Okay. And then just add seaweed and add everything you can imagine to get it in there. And it just makes a deeper bed.
Yeah.
And
better room for the roots to grow.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So I don't, in my opinion, I think you are doing the right thing.
Well, thank you.
You start with what you've got.
Right.
And so any other mistakes?
Potential mistakes.
Yeah. And that, I wouldn't call that a mistake. That's not what I was meaning at all. But are there things that you have learned and went, oh man, I should have done that different, that you can think of at this point? Or maybe it's too early to know that even.
I think it might be a little bit early. Oh, wait, no, I have a really big mistake I made. Oh, yeah. Okay, so last year I bought 3 apple trees from down south and brought them up here. They were doing so good last summer. You know, I feel like we had just a beautiful summer, mm-hmm. and they were all 3 of them growing well. You know, 2 were doing a little bit better than 1. So then I, you know, kept reading about the importance of pruning your apple trees. And I thought, oh my gosh, I did not prune them. And this was around like October, November. And I bought myself a pair of pruners and I pruned my apple trees in November. And
oops.
It was not shortly after I made those cuts that I found out you're not supposed to prune them until the spring.
Right.
I was so sad because I really did put a lot of love into those apple trees, even though they were just the first year. The 2 healthiest looking ones from the summer died.
Mm-hmm.
The one that looked the most straggly made it through the winter and is
mm-hmm.
now flowering mm-hmm. this year, which mm-hmm. could be another mistake for me letting it flower. I don't know. We'll have to see.
Yeah.
It doesn't have
yeah.
a pollinator, so I don't know if it'll do anything.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And I'm really sad that those 2 trees had to die for me to learn my lesson.
Mm-hmm.
but hopefully the 4 trees that I got this year will be a little bit more spoiled because of the sacrifice mm-hmm. last year's trees made.
Well, what people have told me and what I've observed from the people who are successful at growing trees around here, which there's quite a few, it's just part of the game. You lose some.
Mm-hmm.
When I talk to Kate and John and some and Blythe, who have a fair number of trees, they never seem to get too distressed about losing a tree. It just mm-hmm. seems to be part of the game of having some fruit trees that you're always going to lose a few. So
right.
I'm trying to adopt that attitude. I haven't lost any yet, but I'm trying to not get too much, not to have too much angst about losing
right,
a tree.
Right,
so.
Not to put too much investment, emotional investment.
Yes, emotional
into each
attachment
tree.
To a tree. Yes, which you know, I don't have much of an emotional attachment to an onion. One onion is it doesn't do that to me. But an apple tree, I do have a little bit more attachment to. So yes, it's part of the learning curve of gardening. So so have you had any gardening experience at all before? Like growing up, did your family garden, or is this a whole new thing? And how did it happen? How did you
yeah.
say I'm going to do this?
Well, we had, you know, home gardens, but not anything extensive. I grew up in Connecticut, mm-hmm. and now I'm kind of learning about Connecticut climate that it is amazing for gardening, and I kind of am wishing I did a little bit more of it.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather grew a lot of things outside. Like, he was always growing tomatoes and zucchinis and had wonderful returns. You know, now I think about growing tomatoes outside, and I thought he didn't even know how lucky he
yeah,
was.
That's
you know,
right. Yeah.
I'm trying to grow mm-hmm. a tomato in my kitchen.
yeah.
So mm-hmm. I grew up, you know, around.
And your mom is growing. She
oh,
grows
yes.
stuff.
Yeah.
Time.
You know, in high school, the house that we had out Mud Bay, she built this kind of fortress garden. It was not big, but it was an engineer's garden.
Mm-hmm.
She had a drip irrigation system, and she, you know, set it up. She took a lot of effort and time to set it up, big fence. And then she left for the summer, which, you know, she mm-hmm. travels from mm-hmm. time to time. And the drip irrigation system, coupled with, you know, the good soil she had set up for it, it grew the most beautiful broccoli. And
really?
It won in the fair mm-hmm. that year. It was
oh, wow.
it was incredible, and mm-hmm. it was the engineer's broccoli.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really, you know, fun to watch. But it wasn't. Mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily learn a lot about technique or something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was really when I went to, you know, the garden club's meeting. I think it was 3 years ago now, and Melissa Aronson said, if there's any new gardeners here that want to learn from an experienced gardener, we have that program where we set you up with someone that might need an extra hand in their garden, but they have a lot of experience for you to learn from.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yep, that's me. I can help, but I don't know anything and I need to know. So she paired me up with Gina St. Clair, who knows a lot about mm-hmm. gardening mm-hmm. and growing, and was going to be out of town for a little bit that summer. So Gina taught me a lot about gardening in her garden, and it was a wonderful thing to learn because she and I are in a very similar area of town.
Uh-huh, right. You can learn about you've got almost the same microclimate sort of thing. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm just a little bit, just a touch higher elevation. Mm-hmm. And then she turned me on to this one book, I think it's called Growing Food in Hard Times by Steve Solomon. Mm-hmm. So I spent a bit of time, you know, really diving into that. They've got good pictures of root diagrams. They focus a lot on plant spacing and root diagrams. So I got into the theory of plants just a little bit. I know that there's a lot to go through in books and gardening and farming, but
it's endless. But that's the nice thing about having somebody else that you can talk to, in that if somebody has already read a book and said, oh, I think this is a good one, or this one helped me, at least you've got one person's opinion. It's daunting how much information is out there. So
if the one thing I took away from that book is you have to have loose enough soil down below for roots to grow, then that's, I feel really good. You know, at least I know that that's important.
Yeah. Well, I'm really happy to hear that that program or that thing that was established of garden mentor worked and was helpful to you. It makes me think that we should probably put a little bit more energy into that, trying to make those connections of mentors. So.
And I think that could pretty easily happen on the Facebook page. You know, someone saying, I'm willing to help, I want to learn, let me know what I can do in your garden this summer, and matching people up that way.
Yeah. Because most experienced gardeners are usually happy to have a little bit of help weeding or planting or whatever.
And discussing. It's not like we're magicians. You know, we don't want to keep our tricks secret. I love that about, you know, finding my way into the gardening community here, is that we could get on discussions forever about gardening.
I know. Well, the garden conversation, I always tell people, it's really not hard to talk about gardening for 15 minutes. If you are a gardener at all, there's way more to talk about than 15 minutes, as we're finding today. So, one thing that Sharon Svensson said to me when we did our place quite a few years ago, she said, you have about 3 years before the native weeds really start to get established. And whatever they are, I mean, because I think there's different weed problems in different places. So you're still in the honeymoon phase, if you want to call it that, where you don't have that started yet. But so be prepared. That will happen. So spend your energy on getting prepared for that.
That's definitely good to know, because I think just in this season I haven't seen the weeds in my garden bed, but that doesn't mean they're not coming and that I shouldn't prepare for them. Otherwise, I'll kick myself for it later.
Do you have a lot of dandelions blown around in that area?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I've decided to resign myself to dandelions.
Dandelions, horsetail. I mean, there are some things that we just have here and you just have to learn to live with. And you can have it be a problem, or you can just accept that that's what you deal with.
I'm not willing to use the chemicals that are needed to really kill them, so that's why I think.
It's not successful anyway, because there's just more behind them. But the one thing that I keep thinking is that I grew up in Minnesota, and I just had a conversation with one of my family members, and they were talking about the quack grass. I grew up with quack grass, and that is a really horrible weed that is worse than almost any of the ones that we have, because it's more like in the line of buttercups. Buttercups is a problem that a lot of people have here. It's a tough one. My recommendation is try to keep buttercups out of your garden area, because when they get established, they're really hard to get out. And I actually have heard of buttercups they killed raspberries.
Oh, no.
Yes.
That's got to be a powerful plant.
It is a powerful plant. I was really surprised. I wouldn't believe it if I didn't believe that she's good garden experience. But she said that the buttercups took over very healthy raspberry plants and killed it. So be careful of getting buttercups in, I think, it's one of our tougher weeds to manage once they're in. So your specialty is nutrition. We've got just a few minutes, literally. Relate nutrition to a garden.
I mean, the fresher the better. The longer it takes for food to get to us in the stores, the more nutrition it's lost. So home gardens are dirt cheap. They're extremely nutritious and they're really rewarding. When you get kids involved with gardening, they have a lot of pride in what they have made, and they're much more willing to eat it, try it, love it. So that's a huge reason I'm a garden proponent. It's you get to really connect with your food, enjoy it, appreciate it, because you've gotten in there. And
it's not only kids, adults as well. There's something about if you grow that food, you have much more appreciation for it. I at one time didn't eat hardly any greens, and now greens is a huge part of my diet. And part of it is that when I was growing them, it's like, well, I'm growing these things. I better eat them. And if I wasn't growing them and I had to go to the grocery store, I probably wouldn't do it. But when they're in my garden and I bring them in, I'm more prone to eat them. So I think it makes sense. So in the nutrition world, is gardening, are you unusual in being a garden proponent in the nutrition world, like of other nutritionists? Or is that kind of a thing? Is that actually happening where nutritionists in other clinics and whatnot?
Think you'd be hard-pressed to find a dietitian or a nutritionist that either isn't gardening or doesn't really want to garden.
Cool.
I think that if someone's not gardening, it might just be because they don't have the space or ability or time or something like that. But I think that we're all big fans.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I'm speaking for everyone. I'm not a representative for all nutritionists or dietitians, but
No, I'm asking you the trend is what I'm asking. And I mean, you read the magazines and all this kind of stuff about it. So
yeah, there's definitely a good push. I mean, even just as much as sprinkle some lettuce seeds in your yard and see what happens.
Yeah.
It's
what grow you got a container to lose? On your deck.
Exactly.
Okay. We're out of time. It's easy. It's very easy to overtalk gardening. So thanks so much for coming in and talking beginning gardening, Kate.
Thank you so much for having me.
So Kate Fossman and Mardell Gunn, happy gardening.
Happy gardening.